You may be surprised to learn that one of the first modern submarines dates to the American Revolution, designed to bomb British ships.
But on its maiden voyage in New York Harbor in 1776,
the bomb was a bust. It was ahead of its time, maybe a little too ahead. And you can see a replica of it at the Connecticut River Museum in Essex. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan, and this season is all about nautical stories. That's why we've nicknamed it Off the Plank. And don't forget, stick around at the end of the episode for a sea song by the Ranzo Boys.
Inventor David Bushnell grew up in a large farming family in Connecticut.
And he was not really interested in farming.
Amy Trout is with the Connecticut River Museum in Essex.
He ended up going to Yale at kind of an advanced age of age 30 or 31, but he went there because he was very interested in technology of the period, and what David really liked to do in life is blow things up.
Specifically, things in the water. This was early in the days of the American Revolution. The American side had been experimenting with underwater explosives for a while, or at least a rudimentary form of them.
Americans were releasing kegs of black powder and hoping that if it hit something, it would generate a spark and explode.
Like loading landmine.
Exactly, exactly. And that kind of activity was considered a nuisance, and it was watched by the British. So they were on guard for that kind of thing.
So Bushnell thought it might be useful to build an underwater clandestine structure. A submarine.
There had been some experimentations all over the world throughout history. There were things like Roman diving bells.
Aristotle wrote about them. Greeks and Romans would go underwater in upside-down cauldrons. Much later, a 17th-century Dutch inventor built the submarine and managed to stay underwater for a little while. He even took King James I underwater with him on the trip.
The problem was you really couldn't sustain a person underwater for long periods of time and make it mobile and nimble. And that was the challenge. This is in times before factories were producing metal parts and shaped parts. So this all had to be handcrafted.
Bushnell had a New Haven-based clockmaker named Isaac Doolittle craft a lot of the brass gears and levers. Doolittle was also probably the one who designed and built an underwater propeller, solving that mobile and nimble problem. It could only hold enough air for about 30 minutes, but if the operator could get close enough to the surface, a ventilator would replenish the air supply. Bushnell had the ear of a few founding fathers, including Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson. Even George Washington contributed some money to the project.
My favorite fun fact was that George Washington actually called it genius.
And soon, Bushnell came up with an invention he called the turtle. There's a replica of it at the Connecticut River Museum.
It's a wooden structure, a vessel, and it's called the turtle because it actually has an appearance of two turtle shells or tortoise shells sort of together forming this unusual shape.
It looks more like a big wooden acorn to me.
It's a very odd shape, but it proved to be effective for both buoyancy and balance and travel. So it was actually kind of an ingenious shape.
It's got a few propellers and what looks like a drill bit sticking off the top as well. What are some of the things that, I'm trying not to use the term doodads.
Well, what you're looking at are propellers that actually help make it move. So a pilot went inside the turtle by going up on top, and that hatch opens up. It's watertight once it's shut. And then he has levers that he is manipulating inside the turtle, one to make the vessel go back and forth and one to make it go up and down.
And that thing that looks like a drill bit, that's basically what it is. And it's there so the turtle can achieve its goal of drilling into a ship from below and attaching a small bomb to the bottom. Amy Trout says the colonial soldiers probably snuck the turtle to Governor's Island in British-occupied New York Harbor in the dead of night. A pilot climbed into its cramped interior.
And the problem is it's completely black inside, so you had to have some kind of lighting.
They used what's called foxfire fungus, a bioluminescent growth found in the deep woods. They stuck it around the pilot's gauges.
And then he has to secretly and quickly go underwater to the bottom of whatever vessel that you want to attach the bomb to. In this case, it was the HMS Eagle in New York Harbor. And that was the greatest British warship present in New York Harbor. And hopefully that bomb on the bottom of that ship would explode and create a hole in the bottom of the ship that would sink the vessel.
The Turtle and its pilot set off into the harbor. They chugged slowly through the waters, the pilot furiously cranking the handles that operated its two propellers.
Almost like a one-man band, finding his way to the bottom of that vessel. And once he felt he was bumping up against the bottom of the vessel, then he tried to screw in the drill you see on top of the Turtle. That had a rope attached to it to what essentially looks like a barrel, but it's a barrel full of black powder with a clockwork mechanism inside.
A rudimentary bomb, complete with a timer.
Then the clockwork mechanism started to move, and it started to tick down.
The pilot scrambled to affix the barrel.
It didn't happen. He got to the bottom of the ship. He screwed as hard as he can into the bottom of the ship. It just didn't bite. It didn't go into the wood. And historians have debated, did it hit a keel? Did it hit a metal part of the bottom of the ship? Maybe it didn't have enough pressure along it so that he could actually screw in tight enough. It's all historical speculation. We don't know.
The museum has an interactive version of the Turtle where you can climb inside and pretend you're operating it while an actor narrates the events of that night. It's cramped and dark.
Too late to try again. They will discover me.
So he released the bomb and moved away from the vessel. The bomb floated away and exploded some distance from its target, but it did explode, proving that the bomb would have gone off if it had been secured properly.
The Turtle went on two other missions, but those also failed to secure the bomb. The fate of the submarine itself is unclear. The British claimed to have sunk it on a mission. The inventor, David Bushnell, claimed he retrieved it and took it with him when he moved to Georgia. We may never know. But there were doubts over the years whether or not the Turtle was even successful as a submarine. So in 1976, for the American Bicentennial, two local Connecticut inventors created a replica Turtle, according to David Bushnell's original specifications. And in a big ceremony with the governor present, a pilot took it underwater, here on the Connecticut River, next to the museum.
And he went under, people shot a cannon at it, it went under a boat, it worked.
People shot a cannon at it?
They did, yes. So it was really in the spirit of the Bicentennial.
I'm assuming the cannon didn't hit it.
No, it avoided any gunfire and it proved that it could actually travel underwater.
And you can see that replica at the Connecticut River Museum in Essex and step back in time to the days of the Revolutionary War. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan. And there's a pretty well-known folk song with a surprisingly similar story to that of the Turtle, only with two important differences. The person trying to sink the ship isn't in a submarine, they're just swimming in the water. And they do sink the ship. The song predates the Turtle by at least 150 years. It's had a lot of different names over the ages.
This is the Green Willow Tree.
That's Lafayette Matthews of the Ranzo Boys.
There's many variants of this ballad, also called the Golden Vanity. We learned this jaunty version from Frank Warner. It's an example of another daring venture to sink a ship, and like the Turtle, not all goes to plan.
Well, there was a ship a-sailing on the North America. She went by the name of the Green Willow Tree, sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low. Well, we hadn't been a-sailing but 2 weeks or three, till we was overtaken by the Turkish reveille, sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low. Well, up, spoke the captain, whatever shall we do?
The Turkish reveille will surely cut us all in two, sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, up spoke the cabin boy, what will you give to me if I will go and sink for you the Turkish reveille?
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, I will give you gold and I will give you fee, and my only daughter, your wedded wife to be.
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
And out on his back, well, away swam he, a swam till he came to the Turkish reveille.
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, he had a little instrument just fitting for the work.
He bore 9 holes in the bottom of the Turk.
Sailing o'er
the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, some were playing cards, some were shooting dice.
The water tumbled in and it dazzled their eyes.
Sailing
o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, some they came with hats, some they came with caps, trying for to fill all them salty water gaps.
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Well, oh, cried the cabin boy, come take me up on board, and be unto me just as good as your word.
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
Oh no, cried the captain, I'll not take you up on board, I'll not be unto you just as good as my word.
Sailing o'er the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.
If it wasn't for the love of your daughter and your men,
I'd do unto you just as I did unto them.
Sailing o'er
the lonesome lowlands low, so level and
sailing o'er
the lonesome lowlands low, so level and so low.